Welcome to a special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast, an interview with Tony Simons, author of The Integrity Dividend, Leading by the Power of Your Word, Part 2 of 2. Hi, I'm Nathan Ives, and I would like to welcome you to this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast, an interview with Tony Simons, author of The Integrity Dividend, Leading by the Power of Your Word, Part 2 of 2. The Strategy Driven Podcast focuses on the tools and techniques executives and managers can use to improve their organization's alignment and accountability to ultimately achieve superior results. These podcasts elaborate on the best practice and warning flag posts found on the Strategy Driven website at www.strategydriven.com. In this special edition podcast, we interview Tony Simons, author of The Integrity Dividend and Associate Professor of Management and Organization Behavior at Cornell University. And so now, without any further delay, let's get started. Throughout your book, you talk about feedback and that component to the integrity dividend. What does it say then if a manager is just silent and kind of has absent feedback, especially if they're in the presence of, say, a behavior that deviates from the organization's values? Is that another one of those kind of little chips away?
Yeah, I think that a lot of executives, one of the points that I make in the book mm-hmm. is that most of us undermine our credibility in a thousand small and large ways, a thousand small ways that we don't even pay attention to, we don't even notice. And that's one of them. That when a manager allows a poor performing employee to hang around, they mm-hmm. undermine their credibility and they undermine the morale of all their good workers.
Okay. If I were to take this kind of one step further, and say I'm in an executive role and I have a manager who has difficulty with this kind of feedback, is there some sort of
giving
coaching?
Feedback?
Right, giving difficult feedback. You know, maybe they even have someone in their organization that's kind of difficult and makes mm-hmm. giving the feedback hard. Is there something that I, as an executive, I can do to help this person, or does there come a point to where I have to say, hey, I need to move this manager out of this situation because I can't afford to lose my piece of the integrity dividend because this feedback is so important?
Well, there may come that point, but that's got to be a last resort. Mm-hmm. The fact is, dealing with conflict is very trainable. A good coach will talk you through the conflict, will role play with you, and will help you practice encountering and working through the conflict. And saying the awkward truths. So a good coach can absolutely talk someone through that stuff.
Okay. Thinking now of a different kind of conflict, because you have a whole section of the Integrity Dividend that deals with the middle manager's dilemma.
mm-hmm.
And boy, could I relate to that one. I'm not going to mention for our listeners in what role I might be able to relate to that one. I'm happy that today that I don't have that. But in the past, I've had that problem. You talked about in the book about, you know, how to try to address that with your senior, whether that be an executive or just a senior manager. The question I guess I had was, does there come a point in time as a manager where you've just got to say no and accept the consequences in order to save the integrity dividend? Or how as a manager do I weigh that, realizing I might take a hit on the integrity dividend?
Well, let me back up a second, because I think some of your listeners might not get right off the bat what is the middle manager's dilemma. And the middle manager's dilemma is basically the situation that a middle manager himself or herself in, where they have to enforce and promote a policy that they don't think is a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the question is, how do you keep your integrity in the face of that? And part of the problem is that your subordinates can tell. If you're insincere in what you're saying about this policy, they can tell. You're not going to kid them very much, and that's one of the big things about integrity, is people think that they can get away with stuff that they can't. Managers think that they can get away with stuff they can't, because their employees are watching them all the time, and their employees are not stupid. So that's the middle manager's dilemma, is how do you work within that? And that's something that when I, it was funny, because when I talked with executives about it, they said, yes, in principle, we think that probably happens, but we can't remember when it happened to us. And then I talked to middle managers, and they're like, yeah, it happened to me last week.
Sure, yeah.
People are just constantly facing, how do I deal with this?
Yeah.
It was very frustrating to me, because I couldn't come up with a silver bullet that gets you out of the situation. It's a difficult situation. And in essence, what you got to do as a middle manager, you got to ask enough questions. You got to raise your concerns, and you got to ask enough questions to give your boss the chance to sell you on this policy, so that you can at least say the way in which it might be a good idea.
Okay.
And then it might come down to trusting that your boss knows things that you don't know. But your question was, is there a point at which you got to just say no? And the answer is sadly yes. That there is a point at which, if you're being asked to cross your personal ethical boundaries, you got to say no so that you can live with yourself. Will there be a cost to that? Yes. Will you capture the integrity dividend? Yes, but you might lose your job, and you got to be willing to pay that cost.
Okay.
Sorry, I couldn't give you a nicer answer on that.
Oh no, that's a great answer, and. You know, I think back to some of my military training and the like, and you know, the questions I tend to always ask myself is the direction or the directive legal? That's always kind of important to me. Is it moral or ethical? And then, does the individual giving the direction have the right to do so within the company? But except for a bit of the question of being the ethical one. You know, those three questions don't talk about things like being in line with the organization's vision and goals and mission. We could be way off base. And so that's why I was thinking of, oh, wow, you know, my personal system may not have saved me here.
Well, when it comes down to your boss asking you to do something that you think is ethical and they have the right to ask for it, but you just think it's boneheaded, at some point you got to say, you know what, that's not my call to make.
Yeah.
And sometimes you just got to salute and move on.
Exactly. And unfortunately, we've probably all felt like we've been in that situation.
Painful.
At some point in time.
And
yeah.
I mean, I think that the better advice that I can give about that is, if you are in the leadership position, to be sensitive to what you're doing to your subordinates' ability to do their jobs when you force them to do these things.
Okay.
And you know, be sensitive to reducing the strain of the middle manager's dilemma any way you can.
Mm-hmm.
Equip them to sell your policies. Share your rationale. Share your justifications. Many people in executive positions think that it's somehow demeaning to explain themselves. Well, you know what? It's just plain respectful to explain yourself. If you want thinking people beneath you, and you do, then you need to explain yourself to them.
Yeah, and I find that folks, you know, it's kind of a matter of degree. You know, they will do what they're told, and their heart and soul won't necessarily be in it. They'll be much more engaged and productive if it's explained to them. And then, of course, that final ultimate state where you get you know, all the extra effort and the discretionary effort and the like is when they believe in it. But certainly, if we haven't even gone to so far as to explain it to them, I might as well just be asking for going through the motions.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you got it. Sometimes the best you can do is evoke the trust me. Like some of the great decisions, I think it was Lloyd Hill was who's the CEO, the chairman of, oh gosh, I'm blanking, major hotel chain, major restaurant chain. He was telling me about how he worked for the guy who ran Chili's.
Uh-huh.
And when he first the guy first discovered fajitas, and it required all kinds of changes because Chili's used to just sort of sell burgers and chili, and they had to put in broilers and stuff like that. And there were a lot of people who thought it was a terrible idea, but they had to trust the guy, and it turned out working wonderfully.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes you just have to trust the superior wisdom or insight of the superior.
Okay. Okay. Changing tracks just a little bit. As I've gone through training on communications, what I've always been taught was that it takes three positive statements to overcome a negative. So if I give someone kind of a piece of perceived negative feedback, that to just get to be a neutral or the perception of a neutral balance, I have to give them three positives. Is that ratio, or have you sensed that there's a ratio that exists like that for the integrity dividend, or does kind of a breach just kind of break the whole house of cards kind of a thing?
Well, I think that the ratio is more extreme on integrity than it is on positives versus negatives, because how many times do you have to tell the truth to be an honest person? All the time. How many times do you have to tell a lie to be a liar? Once.
Okay.
So integrity perceptions, like trust, are slow to build and quick to drop. Now, that said, we all make mistakes. And people will cut you slack every once in a while.
Okay.
But I'd say that it's more extreme than one in three. I'd say you have to build up a sizable bank account, then you screw up and you undermine your credibility a little bit, and it takes... you got to be living, you know, you got to be keeping your promises for a while to earn back your credit.
Okay.
I'd say it's more extreme than 3-to-1. It's probably, I don't know, a dozen, 2 dozen to 1, something like that.
Okay.
Depends how big the breaches are as well.
Okay, yeah, and I can understand that too, if it's just a kind of a minor exaggeration versus just an all-out life-altering kind of.
Yes. Yes. They're not going to be happy with you if you fire them or lay off or something like that, even if you've been a terrific guy for a while.
Okay. In your book, you also talk about if you do make one of these breaches, that you break your word. Your action doesn't match your word. Mm-hmm. That you should, and you recognize it, that mm-hmm. you should then admit that. Mm-hmm. And I guess, for lack of a better term that I can come up with, do damage control. Is there such a thing as doing too much? Is there a balance there?
Well, you mean doing too much apology?
Exactly.
Yeah, breaking your word and apologizing isn't as good as not breaking your word in the first place. But but it's the best you can do in the circumstances and given the reality, which is that we have to break our word sometimes. I mean, just today on the way home with my 5-year-old son, he said, "Daddy, can we play when we get home?" I said, "Yes." I got home, and my wife right away said, "Tony, you need to set up some vegetables for dinner." So I couldn't play with him. I had to break my word.
Yeah.
And what you got to do is apologize without a whole lot of drama and work to fix it and recommit to where you're going to go next. And abusing yourself about the broken commitment isn't going to help anything, and it just sucks out your energy for recommitting. You got to pick yourself back up. Your question is, can you overuse that? For sure.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
You know, the friend who's habitually late and apologizes every time undermines their credibility. They might be your friend anyway. It's a pain in the butt if they're your boss who's habitually late, or an employee who's habitually late. And you know what? The apology will get you off the hook once or twice. It doesn't get you off the hook the third time or the fourth time.
Okay.
Does that address that question?
That does. It certainly does.
Okay.
Yeah. For my last question, I have kind of it's a personal question, or maybe a personal favor. You know, on the strategy-driven website, we do talk about integrity, but we also talk about, in an organizational sense, what we call organizational accountability. And I was wondering if you wouldn't mind giving us some feedback on our definition of organizational accountability. Just something for us to think about and for our listeners to hear.
Sure.
So what we've defined as being organizational accountability is we've said that organizational accountability exists when all the members of the workforce individually and collectively act to consequentially promote the timely accomplishment of the organization's mission. So we're trying to align a kind of what we've said in a mission statement or vision statement, corporate values, with how we act. So it seemed to me that there were some parallels to the integrity dividend, and I just appreciate your thoughts.
Well, yeah, I think what you're talking about is fundamentally, as you're describing, alignment. It's all about alignment. And I think that alignment is far easier where you have people's words can be counted on, where you have the mission statement of the company really means something. It's a living document. Mm-hmm. That, in fact, I would argue that meaningless, where companies have a mission statement that lives in a desk drawer, that undermines credibility and it does more damage than good.
Okay.
So this is about alignment. You're talking about, in a sense, the corporate behavioral integrity, the extent to which the company is living with the same direction and the same mission that it says it lives by.
Mm-hmm.
And I think also that you can get people on board with the direction that you're trying to go only if they can count on your words.
Yes. Yes. So you have to have integrity in order to achieve this kind of organizational accountability.
Yes.
Yes. Well, Tony, before we close for the evening, you have a website, and it's www.integritydividend.com.
Yes.
And I was wondering if you could tell our listeners about the kind of resources that they can find on your website.
Well, the website has articles about integrity. It talks about the book. It has some testimonials on it, and it's also got a forum where people can register and share their stories, share their insights, join in the conversation. So I'll ask questions about the middle manager's dilemma and collect stories about the middle manager's dilemma. I'll ask questions about what other challenges have you seen as an executive, the challenges of performance appraisal, and keeping your integrity in the face of performance appraisal. So it's an ongoing conversation, and it's always moving and always changing.
Oh, that is great.
We're moving towards issues of sales at some point in the not-too-distant future as well, looking at the role of integrity in sales.
Okay. Oh, that is outstanding. Wow. Well, Tony, I want to thank you not only for your time, but just for the incredible insights that you've shared with us today on the Integrity Dividend and the concept of behavioral integrity just in general. And, you know, I have thoroughly enjoyed your book, The Integrity Dividend, and I would recommend to all of our listeners that they go out and pick up a copy for themselves, because I do think it's a must-have for anyone that wants to help themselves improve their effectiveness in their organizations.
I guess I'd want to add also the book can be a resource for changing an organization. It can be used as an intervention of itself, because if you give it to your managers in the company, it changes the conversation among managers. And just paying attention to it is going to make a difference for integrity. And another way that the book can be used is as a branding tool. If you send out copies to your customers with a note inside that says, "This is how we do business," it looks awfully good for your company.
Oh, I can imagine. I can imagine that. What a powerful statement it would be to someone who is either a customer or a supplier that says, "Hey, we value integrity, and this is how we're going to act, and you can rely on us for that."
Yeah. Well, now, there's a downside that I got to share too, which is that people will start to hold you to your word.
They'll do that.
I find myself walking around with a big red eye on my forehead that people expect me to, gosh, when I return my papers to my students late, they give me major hell.
I can imagine. Well, Tony, thank you again very much for being with us.
It's my pleasure.
And that concludes our interview series with Tony Simons, author of The Integrity Dividend. I would like to personally thank Tony for being with us today and sharing his insights on improving organizational performance through behavioral integrity. As always, we would appreciate receiving your feedback by email at podcast@strategydriven.com. If you enjoyed the show, please consider voting for us on Podcast Alley and visiting our website at www.strategydriven.com. You can find more information about Tony and the Integrity Dividend at www.integritydividend.com. Until next time, so long.